Hi guys, welcome to episode 12 of the To Be Fit podcast. Today I am joined with another Mac Nutrition University student in Charlotte Poynter. Charlotte is from Hertfordshire, am I right then? Hertfordshire, not Luton. She's not from Luton. No, she hates Luton. This is on the recording. Charlotte, if you wouldn't mind, please introducing yourself.
Yeah, sure. So, Charlotte, better known as Charlie. I am a sports therapist by trade, so I did my degree in sports therapy quite a few years ago at the University of Hertfordshire in Luton, but don't live there. And now have my own kind of clinic and work from there kind of 3-4 days a week, and I've got a few therapists that work under me. And then kind of my other love in life is teaching. So I teach for a company called Sports Therapy UK, who deliver sports massage courses, and then also teach degree students on the sports therapy program at the University of Hertfordshire as well. And that's my professional nutshell, really.
So how long have you been kind of in the sports therapy side of things?
I finished my degree in 2013, so 5 years kind of graduated. But I started my company during my second year, so it's kind of been going 7-ish years, and just kind of was using sports massage skills to start with, and then just developed from there into rehabilitation and injuries, which is my kind of main love, really, is kind of injury risk prevention and rehab, getting people strong, getting people able to cope with demands of whatever it is their life entails.
So what was it that kind of set this off, like, that you wanted to go down this career path?
Yeah, so I've always had an interest in sports and therapy. I looked at physiotherapy, and we are slightly different. And actually, two things, really. One was, how old was I? I was possibly 10 and was really lucky enough to have a chance to look around the Arsenal training facility. So I am an Arsenal fan. And it was led by Gary Lewin, who was the physiotherapist there at the time, and was just amazed. I mean, they had a swimming pool where the floor moved, and at the time that was, I was just like, wow, you know, as a 10-year-old. And yeah, the facilities were great, so that was a bit of an inspiration. And then, how old was I? Maybe 15. I had a skiing accident and kind of ruined the knee a little bit, and that took a long time to get back, and kind of went through the process of rehab, and then that kind of inspired me on from there, really. But the knee is now good, and couldn't say I put my own skill set into practice because I didn't have it then, but certainly very, very grateful to the NHS for putting me back together again.
So you run a private clinic, is that right?
That's right, yes. Yeah, so myself and I've got three others, lads that work alongside me, that work under kind of my business name, and we've got a nice little practice going, treating general population sports men and women, so a real good mix in there.
Awesome. So is there any kind of common sort of things that you see that creep up in, particularly probably people are listening to that, or this are already engaging in physical activity? We may have some general pop, but you know, typically you see amongst people that are training, any common things that you see?
Yeah, so you kind of can categorize them quite nicely. So your gym goers are generally your slightly rounded shoulders kind of posture, lots of bench pressing, maybe that sort of thing. Look, and we see a lot of shoulder injuries in those types of people, usually just due to a bit of an imbalance. So they're kind of more dominant, like working the pec, and not so much the rhomboids and the posterior chain, and end up with a little bit of an issue going on with the anterior shoulder, a little bit of biceps issues, that sort of thing. We tend to see a lot of those in your gym populations.
Is this mostly the bros?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
My posture, I'm just sitting up straight right now. Yeah.
I'm good.
Retract that scapula.
Get some engagement going. Listeners, get some engagement going.
Everybody I bet listening's just kind of stood up a little bit. All the bros out there.
Definitely. And then I see a lot of running clients in clinic. So actually had a bit of a niche for a little while in obstacle course races. So when that picked up a few years ago, I was lucky enough to work with one of the first coaches at the time who started doing this Spartan stuff. So then had a feed through of obstacle course racers who I mean, in my opinion, just crazy. I mean, they love it, and fair enough. But the stuff they put themselves through is mad. So we saw a lot of real variety, actually, between running injuries and upper body stuff, because they're having to lug themselves over things. So, yeah, a good mix of stuff in there.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met a runner that hasn't complained of an injury at one time or another. Do you think, I mean, like, running is not something that you'd recommend to the majority of people? I mean, you see a lot of people using running as a weight loss tool, but surely putting that weight through that, and people tend to go from, right, I'm just going to go on a run, and it's like, you know, there's no kind of progressive overload. It's just from nothing to I'm going to run.
Yeah, definitely. And that's when we're looking at evidence-based running is one of my things. I quite like gait analysis and kind of that ability to be able to load when running. And there, it is a massive issue, people overloading their bodies, and that's when things go wrong. So these Couch to 5K programs are great because it's a really slow integration into running where you're not overloading, where, yeah, that's the biggest thing you see, the ITB issues, the hamstring tendinopathies, that sort of stuff. People start doing too much too soon, and especially if they're a little bit overweight, and unfortunately BMI is a big indicator in injuries in runners, unfortunately. So high BMIs tends to do that, whether you're a bodybuilder and then go running, or whether you've got a little bit of adipose tissue and then go running. So yeah
I mean, me personally, I'm all about the low impact stuff if I integrate any form of cardio, if you like. But, like, you know, shin splints and all that are kind of, you know, people who start running, they're just, the muscles there just aren't accustomed to that level of...
That's it.
Yeah. I mean...
overload, definitely.
I mean, are you a big fan of, like, prevention being better than the cure?
100%, yeah. And a lot of my clients end up with, you know, a rehab program to fix them, but then a maintenance program of some strength training to stop anything, or you can't ever stop an injury, but try and prevent an injury from reoccurring again. So just reducing that risk. So yeah, I'm a massive fan of get yourself strong, really. And that's the biggest biggest indicator for not getting injured is being strong.
Yeah. A question I'd probably, out of curiosity, that I see is a lot of, like, repetitive strain, particularly in, like, you know, elbows and knee pain. Is that another result of people going too far? And when that connective tissue is injured, what's the best sort of, because that's a right arsehole to repair
it.
That's gone, it seems like, because I've struggled in the past with knee pain through probably squatting, and then once that pain's there, it's seemingly there until you stop, essentially.
Yeah. And so I'm really against stopping exercise completely. So there's always a workaround. But definitely, usually if it's some sort of tendinopathy, so if you're looking at like a tennis elbow or something like that, which we see not only in your gym goers, but your desk workers that are typing too much or things like that, then actually isometric exercise works really well. So isometric holds, just squeezing the muscle or just providing a resistance against a non-moving object, works really well in sorting those things out. So it's adapting their activities. And, you know, knee pain when squatting, quite common, much the same as hip pain when squatting. So it's looking at how you're squatting firstly, and then possibly just changing it. So quite often maybe a split squat works or something like that. So you're just changing the load on the knee a little bit.
Yeah, I don't squat much anymore. Like,
just avoid it.
I just avoid it and make sure I'm nice and warm, and wear knee pads just to kind of keep them warm.
Just give you a little bit. Yeah. And it is, you know, braces work quite nicely, especially psychologically, as well as, yeah, keeping things warm and things like that. It's a tool to keep you doing something, definitely.
So it worked well. So, I mean, like, moving on to obviously the nutritional side of things, you're a sports therapist. What's kind of led you to this side of the fence in nutrition? Is this just a kind of you wanting to learn more, or something you want to go more into?
A bit of both, really. So we did a very little module on my degree, but mainly in sport and exercise nutrition. So we were looking mainly at how we could change the performance element. So I remember a case study exam that we had to do with an endurance runner, and you had to tweak their intake to make sure they didn't lose weight when they were upping their training and things like that. So we didn't have a lot of general population stuff. So a lot of things obviously being fat loss and a lot of injuries being related to kind of excess BMI, that there was definitely a link there that I wanted to look at. But then also in injury management. So if there was anything that I could recommend to clients to actually improve their ability to recover from an injury. So that's kind of what led me there. I have got a personal training certificate, so I do a little bit of training with clients, and I've just started looking at building that a little bit more, because I do think there is I'm a big advocate of general health, and exercise obviously is a massive part of that, but so is nutrition. So yeah, kind of tapping into everything and seeing that fitting along there. I've got a potential to work with some kind of elite sports women, so possibly looking at being able to introduce sport and exercise nutrition into their programming as well would be really interesting.
Awesome. Like, it sounds like you're coming at all of the right angles,
kind of everything,
you know.
Really, yeah, kind of really interesting to hit everything. Yeah,
well, I think it's awesome, you know, because like a lot of clients, I often call it like the jigsaw and fitting pieces together, you know. And like, once you start getting the performance and obviously the injury prevention there, the nutritional support, you're going to be onto a kind of winner with.
That's it. You're hitting everything, aren't you, really? And I think if you can give your client your best package, then yeah, I think you're into a win. And that's what I think we should be providing as kind of almost health advocates. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, what led you to kind of M&U? Was the what got that on your radar?
Social media, definitely. So started following Martin on Instagram, and that, I'm not quite sure how I got led there. It was probably was following someone else and then they tagged him in something and then it developed. But it was only probably the beginning of this year that I kind of got into that, or maybe back end of last year. So started watching Martin's stuff, and it just resonated with me with his evidence-based practice, through all the university teaching and everything like that. Everything has to be obviously evidence-based. So to find something that is that was really a winner for me, which is why, yeah, went down that route. And I think I buzzed him a question on Instagram, and he replied to it. So I was like, well, there's someone that kind of cares in educating people as well. So yeah, definitely from what I've done so far with the 3 months or so, it's definitely providing everything that I hope for. So it's good.
Has there been any major surprises? I mean, I always ask people who come onto the podcast that kind of week one question when they had a sort of previous bias towards anything, really. Is there anything that you've kind of come across so far that's kind of been like, whoa? Or, and what was your previous biases coming into this?
Yeah, so I've dabbled. So we were discussing earlier, I go in and out of kind of fat loss stages, generally when I've got some sort of event coming up. And my thing used to be, I was told by another personal trainer before I got into it, that carbs, just cut your carbs and you'll lose weight. And yeah, you lose weight, but you also feel pretty crap about it. So carbs, yeah, dropping carbs was definitely a bias of mine, because I knew it worked. I think I'd lost about 5 kilos in 4 weeks just by cutting carbs. So it definitely works, but we now know, well, I know now, that it's just you're reducing your calories. That's all you're doing, just cutting a food element out. So, and coming up to an event, cutting your carbs is not ideal when you want to go and cycle 100 miles. So, yeah, it's not ideal, but it's a method. Yeah, so that was definitely one of my biases. And then since then, the way I now do it is calorie tracking. So I'm a big MyFitnessPal lover. I know it's not for everyone, but that's what I use and it works for me. So that's another bias, personal bias, definitely.
That you enjoy tracking?
Yeah, again, yeah, just don't, maybe not enjoy it, but certainly just the being able to see in front of you what you're putting in, and that educational of, oh, that it's Christmas time, that quality treat, how many calories are in that quality treat? Yeah. Oh damn, there's quite a lot in there. So
how many's in that box?
Yeah, that is now empty. Oh dear.
You know, we'll not track that. No, doesn't count if you don't track it. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Okay.
just don't put it in.
I love this. This is good.
See, I'm just educating the masses right
Thank
now.
you. Yeah, I love this.
But yeah, it's I mean, I think a lot of people, as I've said on previous podcasts, is like a lot of people are do have that bias of tracking.
Definitely,
And
yeah.
it isn't for everyone, and as I've said previously, it is a great education tool of just creating an element of awareness.
Definitely, and that's what I've found it most useful for, and I've used it with the few clients that I've kind of started to use, and they've seen massive changes, and it is that educational thing, really. It's the how much can I play around with? I've got a time to go out of an evening if I know I'm going out on a Friday night. Okay, well, Wednesday, Thursday, I need to be a bit sensible, and Saturday, yeah, okay, I'll be a bit sensible as well. So it allows them that flexibility, really, which has been great.
Great. So what's your kind of like personal goal with your own nutrition?
So I suppose a lot of it ties in with the kind of mental game, isn't it? You want to look better. So a little bit is looking at that. But then there's that attachment of, looking better doesn't necessarily make you any happier or anything like that. So for me, it's making yourself a little bit more comfortable, and then mainly in a health. So I've just taken up a little bit of CrossFit, so a couple of times a week, and pull-ups is one of the things I cannot currently do. So if I'm lighter, it should be a hell of a lot easier to do a pull-up. Much the same as when I'm doing an event. I've got a half marathon in March. The lighter you are, in theory, the easier these events should be. So nutritionally, I'm kind of looking at just dropping body fat to make everything a hell of a lot easier, really, at the moment.
Yeah, and again, that injury prevention, I suppose,
Oh,
with.
100%, yeah, with the running, definitely.
So you're doing a lot of running at the minute.
yeah, little bits. So I go
Is
through
it a
phases.
half marathon or a full marathon you're doing?
Half marathon, so it's okay.
All
It's
right, yeah, it's only
yeah, it's
13 mile.
okay. It's only
13
13,
half mile. It's not like
whatever. Yeah.
26.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And the last 2 years, I've done London to Brighton on my feet, which is 63 miles. So anything compared to that is nothing, really. So
Yeah, God.
it's nothing. So yeah, it's going to be at the moment stripping back fat, and then closer to the event in March, it will be just looking a little bit more performancey related. So I'm not looking for smashing times. I'm not that good a runner. I'll just do it just to say that I can do it, really. Just see what I can put my body through, and that's kind of what this London to Brighton was as well. Just see mentally if you can put yourself through it. I'm a big advocate of that as well.
Awesome. So what does your nutrition in a nutshell look like right now, just out of curiosity, like?
Yeah. So for me, kind of standard day is I'm actually because I've got to be up and out quite quickly with any of the work I'm doing. Weetabix is my go-to breakfast because it's nice and easy and not particularly calorific in the grand scheme of things. And then I found a love of the muscle foods, quick and easy microwave pots, because they're about 400 calories and they're perfect for taking into a clinic day and just chucking them in the microwave. And then the evening meal is just some sort of protein, carb, and veg. So it's you're gonna have a few snacks in there because that's human life. And it's just trying to limit those to be relatively calorie okay snacks, really. So they're my kind of goals for daily living, really, at the moment.
Have you got a kind of calorie or protein goal that you've got?
Yeah, so my calorie goal at the moment is sitting around 1500-ish. So it's yeah, kind of just dropping steadily. I'm not looking for any sort of crash dieting, but just enough to just get me working in the right direction, really.
And have you got any strategies in place to kind of take care of Christmas, which is coming up? Is that something that you've already figured
Yeah,
out?
so I'm not going to do crash and burn and just go, oh, sod it, it's Christmas. But it's definitely a bit, as I said, what I'm coaching the client to do. I know I've got a few events in there, going out, Christmas meals with your work colleagues, that sort of stuff. And you're going to have a few drinks and, three course meal or something. So it's then just tinkering that to go, well, I'm only either going to add in an extra training session that week and or play around with my calories around that day to make sure that I am dropping slightly to keep that maintenance over a week.
Just having a broader overview over everything.
Definitely, yeah, working it as a weekly rather than a daily goal is definitely the way that works for me.
Yeah, and that's something I'm a huge advocate of, is like having a little bit of this is sometimes what people struggle with my fitness pal. It takes the intuition out of the nutrition. So it's about maybe using that with other things, and that just being one method. For example, if you're not hungry, you don't have to hit your macros.
Definitely. Don't put it in for the sake of putting it in.
Yeah, all it's either gonna you can either A, have a bigger deficit, or B, eat it at a different time where maybe you've got events and things like that.
Definitely. So just playing around with it. And I think there is, I don't know if it's on the paid option of MyFitnessPal, but you can kind of see that weekly overview as well. So, and I find that useful. I just mainly use that as, keep an eye on my daily, but look at where I am over a week, take that average and see what's going on.
Yeah, for me, I think it's been daily weigh-ins that's really allowed me to have a lot more intuition with my nutrition. So I've found, obviously, if trends start going in the wrong direction either way, I can therefore have a bit more intuition with my nutrition. And I just love saying intuition with nutrition as well.
It's a great, I think you should do
Yeah.
that.
I'm gonna hashtag the shit out of
Yes,
that.
okay,
But
that's great.
mostly, if I see I'm dropping a bit too much weight, I can be like, I need to eat more. If I'm gaining weight, I can be like, I need to eat less.
So you're really using it as a, as a tool
Yeah, you just can see
guiding
the
you on your
trends a little bit more as opposed
Yeah,
to
definitely.
singular weigh-ins once a week. Especially within the female, you can
Oh,
probably have
massive.
such fluctuations. And
It's a nightmare.
yeah, a lot of people can be like, oh, daily weigh-ins. Oh, you'll give people. And it's kind of like, well, if it does freak you out, maybe it's not the best option. But I've found with a lot of people, after a while, they just habitually get on the scale and it
And
is
just
what it
rest
is.
in
Yeah,
your
they
belly.
get less of an emotional attachment with it.
Rather than that weekly check-in
Yeah,
that you
that weekly,
go through.
that big thing that they stress over, and sometimes they
Definitely.
maybe do stupid things the day before in order to like.
Cut everything that they
Yeah,
can. It's
I'm
really
gonna
interesting.
drop water, I'm gonna drop carbs, and it's like they're doing an MMA fight or something.
Yeah, become a quivering mess before the one.
They get in the sauna steam room and stuff, spitting in a cup.
Training in a bin bag.
Yeah, all of that shit, and then like, yes, I lost a pound this week. They go and get a kebab to celebrate.
Do you use measurements at all? Are you a fan of measurements or?
Well, personally, I use my weight belt as
Right.
my kind of like,
As your
so
goal.
I know if I'm really lean, if I'm contest lean, that's like three holes or something in. If I'm like at the top end, that's like five holes. And at the minute I'm sitting at about four, which is like
Okay,
nice. So
happy
I'm like
medium.
I'm in a happy medium, so and that's for me, that's what I use to gauge. But I am a big advocate of like tape measures. For me, if I lose weight, that's generally going to be more fat because I've been training a lot of years. So realistically, me gaining muscle in an energy deficit's not
It's not gonna
it's
happen.
not gonna I've got to go through like phases of massing and cutting and things like that. So if I lose weight, generally it's going to be more fat as opposed to there's not really going to be that mismatch between, oh, did he gain a bit muscle and lose a bit fat? So generally, for people who are like engaging in resistance training and just starting and in an energy deficit, that's where like pictures, clothes, tape measurements. But I think clothes is probably one of the best ones because tape, even
Yeah, I
tape
love using
measurements,
it.
you've got that human error. Whereas like,
Definitely.
there's no real human error with putting your pants on. Unless you're thick.
And going, I can't breathe, or, oh, okay, I've got some room.
Oh, these jeans feel, or like your belt, that actually gives you a, you put your belt on. And yeah, just them sort of things I really find are useful tools for measuring progress.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
like
And I think
I,
that's really important.
yeah, and I, this is what does my head in with, especially general pop, is the clothes are falling off them, and they're looking better, they're seeing lines, but the scale's saying that maybe, yeah, it stayed the same, and they're like, they focus on that one thing, and I'm like, yeah, but your pants are falling off you. They're like, so it's just about that education and reinforcing, like, obviously, the big picture of it. And it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to lose weight or do you want to lose fat? And
Definitely,
yeah, and that's the thing with, I think women do I don't know, fear lifting weights.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's a massive fear avoidance of it generally, and I see it in my world as well. If you're trying to get, especially a female runner, to do some resistance training, it's a nightmare. And then yeah, add that in with kind of anyone trying to lose weight, and yeah, especially women, and it's a nightmare to get them doing something resistance wise. And as we had just said, doing cardio massively, if you are a little bit overweight, doesn't always work because the bones and the kind of bone and muscle doesn't cope with it particularly well if you're then doing a load of high impact activity. So weight training is the best way to get that exercise in without giving you too much of an issue, I think.
I think a lot of people, when I suggest weight training, because I've got a bit of a bodybuilding background, they automatically think that I've got this bias there, which admittedly I do have a bias toward. I love resistance training. However, I'm speaking from a generalistic point of view. It's like, hey, resistance training is really good. And you don't have to go on to a 5-day bodybuilding split. It can be
Yes.
as little as, like, 2, 3 days or something like that.
Definitely. Yeah, just and I think that is massive. And I think also accessibility to that sort of world is quite difficult. A lot of weight sections for women are quite daunting. You walk in, there's a lot of stacked guys in there and things like that. And for a woman, potentially even, an overweight woman to walk into that area, it then becomes a, oh God, what are people going to be thinking of me? What, I don't particularly know what I'm doing, or I've only got this little program, and it becomes a massive issue, which it doesn't really need to be. Resistance training doesn't have to be loads of weight. It could be body weight training or anything like that, which you can do at home. So I think it's, yeah, a really interesting mental concept that then comes out of that as well.
And I think we mentioned, like, progressive overload as far as, like, the couch to 5K. It can be the same with resistance training. Like,
Definitely.
for us, particularly I'm thinking, like, elderly people, even stand up, sit down out of chairs, and even getting into the pool and aqua aerobics and building up to sort of maybe more resistance. Everybody thinks they need to be doing all or nothing, and then it's
That's
kind of
it.
like, let's, like, build up to this sort of level. Let's get you in the environment first.
Yeah, and get you comfortable in there. Just, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and water is a great resistance tool. We use that in rehab heavily because you can do a lot. You can do stuff where you make yourself lighter because of where the water level is. But you're getting a fab. Water is fab at resistance. Hold a float in your hand and try and move it around and see how difficult that is.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great tool for that.
I used to be an aqua aerobics instructor.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, man. Yeah, in my leisure centre days.
Nice,
Yeah, they used
nice.
to hire us on any spinning, aqua aerobics, all of that sort of jazz.
Yeah,
But
they're doing this now. They're even putting spinning inside pools, aren't they?
yeah. Let's
Yeah,
put the
crazy
bike in
stuff.
the water.
Yeah, to make it more difficult than it already is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, looking at your training, and this, to be fair, let's talk a little bit about CrossFit, and this is one of the things I think's great about it is it's kind of, I mean, made lifting the cultural norm, and it's
Yeah.
really welcoming of females, and all of these, like, elite CrossFit females are more jacked than a lot of
That's unreal.
guys. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's a great I'm by no means an expert, but I've kind of followed it for a little while and then decided to give it a go. And the lady that I'm working with owns her CrossFit gym, which I think is also a great thing that females are in that gym owning
Yeah.
business as well, which I think is great. And yeah, definitely everything is scalable, which I think is fab. So even if you've never picked up a barbell in your life or anything like that, every coach is trained to build you up to that. And a pull-up we were talking about earlier, you can use bands, you can use jumping pull-ups. There's loads of different variations that you don't just because you've never done one before or can't do one, it's not inaccessible. And it's also that group, if you're in a class, it's that group setting, which we know is great. It gets people working harder and creating friendships and social elements in a gym as well, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to kind of learn from the CrossFit community, and it doesn't matter what CrossFit, good CrossFit gym you go into, because, like anything, the industry does have poor,
Oh, yeah.
and I can imagine from a physiotherapy point of view, you probably, I mean, I think years ago when CrossFit first came on the scene, it was almost laughed at with the poor technique, and obviously it's evolved massively from then. Yeah, from there,
Definitely.
now the coaching's a lot more savage, but that was relatively in its infancy. And like even like bodybuilding now is just so scientifically, any sport, any competitive sports now just so much more than what it is at its core, really.
Definitely, and I think there was again, evidence-based stuff. There was some literature that came out fairly recently looking at CrossFit injuries because everyone goes, "Oh, people lift badly. It's done really quickly. Therefore, we must have a load of injuries." And actually, it's got nothing. I think per session, CrossFit is actually safer for you than if you were doing other stuff. It's just because of the frequency that they're doing it. They're usually training, 6 times a week or something. So over those hours accumulated, you're actually less likely to get injured doing CrossFit than other stuff, which seems bizarre, but it just, it's a point to be proven, really, that yeah, the technique's there, and it's just the amount that they're doing, it just predisposes them a little bit more.
Yeah. Do you love a kipping pull-up?
Yeah, I'm just learning the old kipping pull-up. Yeah, so I've not quite mastered it yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
It's
But my goal is a strict pull-up for sure. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
is that an overhand or an underhand pull-up? That's your goal, are you?
It's an overhand pull-up. Yeah.
Yeah, like a proper lat one, chest right
Yeah,
up
proper
in there.
lat-y. Yeah,
Yeah, good.
core
That's
biceps. Yeah.
they're the best pull-ups. I mean, I understand why they do the kipping for reps and
Yeah.
things like that, but being a bro at heart.
Yeah, proper strict.
Oh
Yeah.
yeah, you got to. Even if you can only do two or three.
That's it. It's just to be able to go, look what I can do. Yeah.
So I mean, looking at like your career, I suppose, what's the like long term with integrating the certification from Mac Nutrition into it? What are you looking to branch out into, I suppose?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky. Current clinic I've got is quite a larger space, so I've got kind of a pulley system there, squat racks, or squat rack, dumbbells. So it's effectively a rehab room. The idea would be to build a rehab centre, so bit of a gym space and then some clinic rooms, and be able to integrate nutrition, rehab, strength and conditioning, everything kind of under one roof. So you're kind of creating a bit of a performancey center or something. So being able that was kind of the ultimate dream, and I kind of see it getting there in the next couple of years or so. So tick off Mac Nutrition, and then be able to start integrating that on a smaller scale, and then just build from there, really. So that's where I see it going, is kind of being able to offer this holistic service to clients when they come in, to be able to get them to the best that they can be, really.
Yeah, I noticed on your Facebook as well, on your business page, which you should go and follow, everyone, is, yeah,
Definitely.
see, we got that one in
I
there.
love that. Thank you.
I'll link all these in the show notes
Brilliant.
as well. But that you're launching like a kind of a weight loss, fat loss sort of program in the new year. Do you want to explain a little bit how that's going to work?
Yeah, so kind of building on that group concept that we were just discussing with kind of CrossFit, but actually doing it with a fat loss or weight loss program. So very small intakes, are just kind of having 15 people all run through a Facebook group, and there will be educational videos put up, kind of 3 to 4 minute videos discussing how to lose that fat in that 4 weeks, or lose that weight. So calories in versus calories out, hitting potentially protein goals, how to introduce training or exercise, because we know it doesn't necessarily have to be in the gym for an hour. It can just be hitting X number of steps a day, or just increasing that daily activity slightly. So it's just all those sort of educational videos are going to be chucked on there, along with that group support mechanism for another kind of 14 other people in there with you, and just trying to hit out to the public, really, that it's affordable. So I'm just running it for £30 for a 4 week access to that, which is kind of less than your gym membership potentially, but actually being able to have contact with a trainer almost whenever you wanted, and this group support mechanism. So yeah, it's a trial. Haven't done anything like it before, but it's trying to hit a large number of people with information, really, because I think there is so much rubbish information out there that just trying to hit people with the good stuff is somewhere I want to be, really.
Is that primarily you that's going to be running that?
So that'll be me that'll be running that. Yeah, so at the moment I'm the only one within the business within any sort of kind of nutrition element. So at the moment it's going to be me, and then my idea is to get the other lads that work with me hopefully on board with the nutrition stuff, because I think it would be an additional thing into their practice as well. But yeah, at the moment, just me in there.
Have you found with, like, obviously nutrition and even within physiotherapy that often the answers are relatively simplistic, and it's just about, like, you know, putting it into language that people can easily understand?
Yeah, I was talking about this with I've got an osteopath friend, and we were talking about how that sports therapy, osteopathic world, chiropractic, everything like that, we all pretty much do the same thing. And yeah, being able to then deliver that information back to a client where there's actually a physio called Adam Meekins, who got to throw out because his message is simple. It's basically can't go wrong getting strong. And that's effectively what sports therapy, physiotherapy is, strength, being able to build some tolerance and strength. So I think that applies back to nutrition. We know that fundamentally it's calories in, calories out, but it's how you can then get that into someone's life that's quite important. So yeah, definitely that being able to put over a message is the really important thing.
What sort of things do you recommend for, like, injury prevention?
Progressive overload is that big one. So just if you're going to take anything up, doing it gently and progressively, and doing resistance training. So whether that be body weight, gym, anything like that, is just build that in. Whatever it is you're doing, build some strength and capacity, really.
What about things like stretching and warm-ups and all of that sort of jazz?
Yeah, warm-ups I'm an advocate for, just getting the body ready for exercise. Static stretching post-exercise is, in the research, is really wishy-washy as to whether it's good or whether it's bad. So my general advice to people is, if it feels good and you like the feel of it, crack on. If not, it's not gonna make your DOMS any better the next day. So just do what you feel.
What about foam rolling? That had a lot of love a few years ago, but it seemingly, like, pitted off a bit.
Disappeared again. Yeah, I think their claims weren't quite what it actually did in reality, unfortunately. But again, if it feels good, crack on, because it's kind of like a self-massage tool, and massage really used to change that pain perception. So if it feels good, then definitely do it. But in terms of, you know, releasing fascia and being able to hit those trigger points and disappear those, it's unfortunately all a little bit of advertising. But definitely if it feels good and makes you feel looser afterwards, then it's definitely a one to go with.
And I suppose, is that the same for, like, putting lacrosse balls in your shoulders and stuff like that?
Exactly. If it feels good and makes it feel better afterwards. And you might get a small temporary change in range of movement. So if you tested it, you know, tested your flexibility, your pecs pre and post doing using a lacrosse ball, you might see a difference, but actually that would be temporary. It would just be usually a neurological, neuromodulating, so a neurological change that's gone on temporarily.
Yeah, I've heard people say, like, especially physios, that it could potentially do more harm than good, especially people like foam rolling the lower back and stuff like that.
It shouldn't do harm. I suppose it depends on how you use it, but yeah, if you're just rolling, it shouldn't do too much harm. It's painful. We know it's painful. You know, you start rolling on that and it's painful. So it's whether that does anything. But in terms of tissue harm, it shouldn't really do anything too bad.
I think many people just associate that pain with being, like, a positive feedback.
It working, yeah, no pain, no gain, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Is that true? I mean, to what extent?
It's not really.
No.
I
didn't think it would be.
You can get beaten up with a sports massage table, but actually it probably would work just as well if you just gently rubbed someone. So, there's no, it's just preference. Whatever. If it makes someone feel better, then we say it's okay.
And do you think a lot of, like, you know, I don't know if there's, I imagine it's the same within your field, there's a lot of non-evidence-based therapists out there who, I don't know, I've been to one who I think, like, I reckon I could go to the police and claim that he assaulted us.
Really?
Yeah. I reckon I'd have a case.
Yeah, just absolutely beaten.
Yeah, like, they just ripped us apart, like, you know, and I just think, did he just do that because, like, he could? Just to, like, go, oh, yeah, this is working. I've caused this guy, like, major pain.
Yeah, bit of
But
sadism somewhere, yeah.
yeah, I mean, if I was into that, I would have loved
Yeah,
it. But also, I'd seen on Instagram, we've got a physiotherapist working out of our gym, and I showed him it, and it was, I kid you not, this guy, he had cleavers,
Jeez.
which were set on fire. Like, and rubbing them up this person, and
Wow.
I was just thinking, at what point did he go, you know what, these cleavers need to be set on fire, and I just showed him, and he was like, fucking hell.
Yeah, I
and
mean, wow. Yeah, I'm surprised he gets insurance.
and another thing, cupping.
Yeah, it's again, it's a little bit. Evidence is really poor. And in fact, I just a
It
bit
looks
like MNU,
horrible.
did a nice myth-busting lecture. I kind of did one of those to my third-year students the other week, and cupping was in there. And again, the evidence is really poor, and it actually doing too much. Watch me get a backlash of stuff now. If it makes people feel better, we're in that argument of, do we, don't we use it? If people feel better after treatment. And that unfortunately is where we're kind of at with that physiotherapy, sports therapy. A lot of the hands-on stuff makes people feel better, but isn't actually making any tissue changes. And that's where the exercise and the rehab has to come in. So a lot of people get, regular sports massage, which will make them feel better, but in terms of actually doing loads, what I'm just throwing out my sports massage clients now, but in terms of actually doing loads, it's not. It's all the exercises they do around that 1 hour a month that's the big change.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like the dietary industry is these trends will come and go, and so like cupping and all this seems in, so a lot of people are doing it, and for me it just doesn't really fly.
Yeah, that's it. You have the latest Atkins diet or the latest whatever comes in and out, doesn't it? It's celebrity endorsement, and then it will disappear again. And we see it like K taping, kinesiology taping in the 2012 Olympics, all that coloured tape everywhere. It
Yeah.
was all over the place, and the industry took off. And then loads of research gets published, and it all goes, nope, unfortunately, it doesn't do what it says. And yeah, just because it's got a bit of a sportsman attached to it, it becomes the next big thing.
It looks
And
good,
yeah,
though.
we see it in the dietary. Yeah, exactly. We see it in the diet world. People can write books and chuck on TV, and it's the next best thing for general public.
Is there anything aside from dropping carbohydrates that you've done that's been a little bit extreme or from a dietary perspective? Anything that you look back and think, oh, God.
What did I do? No, I think carb cutting is the only real one that I've tried. I know family members that have tried the old slim fast diet, that dietary kind of shake supplement. So instead of a meal, you just switch out. And yeah, it works temporarily and then disappears again. So it's that unsustainable thing. But yeah, I'm sure in my younger days I would have tried that. It's just I don't like milkshakes. So it doesn't really work.
Who doesn't like milkshakes?
Yeah, that's me, unfortunately. I have a real issue with milk. Maybe that's one of my biases. I just,
Yeah.
ugh, just I really don't like it. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you don't like it, you just you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What about protein shakes? You're not like.
No, I can't. I don't know. I think it's the consistency. Like, I
Right.
can't do. Yeah, I've tried loads of different. I've tried whey and pea protein, everything. I just can't. That consistency just makes me. Ugh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oops.
Wow, bomb drop there, like,
Yeah, I know.
yeah,
Yeah, God.
right, so moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about this week's module, because that's what we do a little bit. We don't go into incredible detail, we just kind of talk about what we got from it and maybe offer some practical recommendations. And I suppose, like, another thing that maybe I want to touch on quickly is like the importance of nutrition when it comes to like obviously your line of work is injury prevention. Do you see a huge link between the two?
Yeah, I think there is a big link. So obviously we know protein's fundamentally is growth and repair with a few other bits in there. So I think, yeah, definitely adequate protein in people's diets that are training is always a big issue, and it is something that I'm starting to talk to people about when they're injured, and recommend. I think Martin famously says, isn't it, don't take people grapes, take people protein or something like that if they're in a hospital or something like that, I think. And so yeah, definitely protein is a big one for the people that I'm working with. And those that are doing, so I see a lot of marathon runners obviously come January-ish when they start to train for London Marathon, etc. And they always ask how best to, you know, how best do I control my diet to be able to optimally perform or whatever. So for me, knowing more about that is going to be really important. And I think for them, it's a big important factor that is in addition to their training. So yeah, I think there is definitely a need for it in the sports therapy arena as well.
Yeah, I think like with the course being like 52 weeks long, yeah, there's modules that we're not quite there yet with, and yeah, like obviously your training endurance, you're like, oh, I want to know what I need to be doing. So like a lot of that is like next week's this, and like, yeah. Oh god. But I mean, this week's module was on nutritional fat.
Yes.
So was there any kind of key things that you took away from this week's lecture? Any surprises as far as fat's concerned?
I was really surprised at there not being a kind of gram per kilogram recommendation, because obviously we're quite used to that for our protein and kind of carbs, with it all being done in percentages and things like that. Then I think it makes it really difficult, mainly for general public, to be able to know how much they should be eating. But then for us as nutritionists to have to kind of unpick and start working out our percentages makes it a hell of a lot harder than just being able to go, oh, you're X amount of body weight and therefore you need to eat X amount of grams of this. So that was a bit of a woohoo moment, kind of going, oh, okay, this is different.
Yeah. And I think the great thing was, like, when they did give out percentages, it was something for especially general population was, you know, towards that 15% up to 80%.
Yeah.
So as far, like, obviously when people's fat intake goes at high, from an energy balance perspective, if something goes up, something's generally got to come down, which would be carbohydrates.
Yeah. And that becomes a bit of an issue depending on who you're working with as well.
Totally. You know, we've got to take into account people's preferences, and also there, a lot of people that were, might be working with are going to be having a performance goal in mind as well, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I found that quite interesting, and the variety, like you say, 80% is a massive.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty much ketogenic, that.
Exactly. Yeah, I just insane amount. I can't even kind of physically think about how much that would be. Kind of staring at a plate almost. You kind of go, that's a lot of yeah. So yeah, that was really interesting. And then I also found the kind of idea behind this kind of oils being different rancidities was quite interesting, and kind of olive oil, although kind of when Martin was discussing it, didn't kind of discuss coconut oils so much, but that olive oil being the best option when you're looking at your different oils was something I'd kind of heard battered around a little bit, but not really knew too much about. So I found that quite interesting.
And this is referring to, it's like I don't know, when cooking with its
exactly,
temperature,
yeah,
like that it gets to and starts kind of like going a little bit dodgy.
That's it, yeah.
But like, I think it's because coconut oil is such high saturated fat that it kind of holds better.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And that kind of battering of saturated fats, you know, not being so kind of warranted really was quite an interesting pull from the lecture as well.
I think big surprise for me was when it went into the fat composition,
okay.
And it showed like breast milk and the,
yeah,
you know, the saturated, monounsaturated, polyunsaturated distribution. But for me, lard, like,
yeah,
you know, like 42, I've got the note here, 42% saturated, 44% monounsaturated and 10% polyunsaturated, you know, so I might start getting a bit more lard in my diet.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? And then, yeah, I also made a note of that one, thinking it was interesting, with coconut oil was sitting at 87% saturated fat in that same table. And yeah, you just kind of go, wow, okay, you know, I've been bashing saturated fat for ages. And then, yeah, the coconut oil that everyone thinks is healthy comes out as something fairly high. So it's, yeah, it's quite a nice, yeah, quite fascinating kind of distribution of those.
Yeah, when it comes for me personally, like looking at dietary recommendations for people, firstly I'll figure out like a protein, and then in the spreadsheets I use, it tends to like I put a protein target, and then it works out a fat percentage, like a minimum fat threshold. So I've got that, so it kind of works out around 20%. However, I will can individualize it, you know. So sometimes they'll be the first two things that I look at is protein and fats, and then the remainder of those calories can come from carbohydrates. But again, it's kind of giving them people the flexibility that, hey, protein and calories is the most important thing. Well, calories in general is the most important thing, then protein and calories, and then protein, carbs, fat is the least important. So at the very least, they can still hit them sort of things. But as far as like a minimum threshold for fats, we don't want people to completely eliminate them because obviously play an important role within health.
So that kind of immune function, wasn't it, was is being spoken about. So how important it is to have immune function. And I think you see that kind of when I was watching the lecture, there was something that came to my mind, was working with a female endurance athlete who had stress fractures, and she was clearly not eating enough generally. So calorie wise, she was unfortunately quite skeletal. And actually, that it start it all kind of started to resonate again because of had quite a few bouts of being unwell and things like that in terms of kind of flu-y cold stuff. And actually, when you look at it, then fats, she probably, if I knew more, was probably cutting fats, thinking they were bad, and then that's kind of sparked about all this other stuff that kind of came about with her. So I think, yeah, that dropping below that 15%, or don't dropping below, not dropping below, is really important for anyone, let alone your athletes.
And I think we can only give general advice within these, platforms. And until we work with somebody individually and we're able to kind of draw feedback from obviously what they're consuming and what they're saying, the mood and so on. Like, I mean, for me personally, if I go too low in fats, then I generally do feel tired and, if things like libido gets affected and so on and so forth. And other things like the ability for vitamin and mineral solubility, like with A, D, E, and K, I think off the top of my head, they're like fat soluble. So you totally cut them out of the diet. We're looking at more what's going to promote optimal health.
Definitely. And we need those. Everything's really important. I think fat is so negatively, just by the word, isn't it? People think fat and go, oh, it's bad, it's a negative word. But actually, yeah, it's so important to our daily functions and being happy, really. So yeah, really, really important.
And it tastes good.
Yeah, who doesn't love that sort of stuff?
Yeah, cheese.
Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
like
Milk if
our
you
yeah
like milk.
our homework is like list 10 sources of fat, and
Yes,
I'm
yeah.
just putting 10 different cheeses down.
What's your favourite cheese? What's your
Wow, like I love brie. I just love the
Oh, that's
mouthfeel, like the
yeah.
creaminess of brie.
Yeah,
But like
yeah.
I do like a Stilton.
Okay, quite a strong,
Yeah,
yeah.
especially within a steak sauce.
Is it the steak or the
No,
sauce?
it's a combination. I think it's, I was at Miller and Carter the other night, so that was
That was
pretty
nice.
special. Yeah, we had like a cheese sauce. That was good. Yeah, I like all the cheeses. I don't know if there's a cheese I don't really like. Yeah, see, we're learning.
Very important, yeah.
I mean, talking about fats, and obviously there's been a little bit of a kind of, especially around saturated fat, and it's linked to coronary heart disease, I suppose, is its kind of big thing. But really, the thing that we want to be focusing on is trans fats, which kind of got lumped together with saturated fats, where we've got to look at these as being almost separate. And these had like a very big correlation with increased risk of coronary heart disease.
And I think, yeah, that again, it's that education out to general population, isn't it? Of it's been poor because they've been lumped together. There isn't this identification of which one is seriously bad or increases your risk of these diseases. So yeah, your heart diseases and vascular diseases, things like that. But yeah, I think that's a really big thing from a public health point of view, isn't it? Of that distribution of information. When they're lumping everything together, people aren't getting the education they need on what is okay and what's slightly not okay.
Yeah, and these trans fats, in particular are generally in more processed foods and they extend the shelf life massively.
That's it. So they're putting more and more in these highly processed but also highly palatable foods, aren't they? They're the ones that people want to eat the most. So yeah, I think it's definitely that education around those sort of things is really important. So your pastries, isn't it, and your fried foods, that sort of stuff, which we know fundamentally aren't ideal for us anyway, but it's then why they're so bad is the issue.
Yeah, and I think like when it come to the end notes and the summary as far as fats are concerned, always bring it back to like a level of balance.
Yeah.
And it's the same with carbohydrates, and it's the same with proteins, you know, and it's the same with the diet entirely, is like have a balanced approach. And especially with fats is, you know, have, and this is what I'll tell my clients, is like have a third of each, try and aim for a third of each. So polyunsaturated, monounsaturated and saturated fats.
Yes, there's a nice spectrum of hitting everything, because it's quite a lot of need for, I think it's EPA, isn't it, and DHA he was talking about, needing,
like fish oils and stuff like that.
So you're needing that sort of stuff in your diet, so you've got to hit all three to be able to get that and make foods taste nice, really.
In the mention with vegans, that the sauces, it's a really inefficient process to convert it into the fats that are really essential for them, therefore like taking it for something like, was it what was the sauce? It was from I'll get my note. Vegetarian sauces. But marine and fatty fish are the kind of preferential sort of options for people.
Yeah, it was something, I want to say algae. Was it algae?
Yeah, I think it might have been, yeah.
So you can hit the vegetarians and the vegans with that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Because obviously, yeah, they don't take in as much. If you're a meat eater, you're getting it a lot more readily than if you're a vegetarian or vegan. So yeah, I think it's important that education is put out there as well.
Yeah. So what are your kind of go-to sources of fat? What do you like?
As discussed, I'm not a massive dairy fan. So kind of, I use fish. Fish I'm not too bad with. So I'm a tuna and a salmon fan and don't mind white fish, so cods or something like that. So fish I'll eat at least probably once a week. And then meat sources, I'm primarily a chicken eater. So I get a little bit fats from there. But yeah, they're probably my main go-to, really. I use a light spray for cooking. So if I'm ever frying anything, I use a light spray. So I'm not getting a mass amount from that sort of stuff. I'm not an olive oil cooker. But certainly in the summer, salads wise, I'll be using slight olive oil dressing and things like that on salads, because I do like that sort of Mediterranean feel on my salads. But yeah, how about yourself? Do you use?
I tend to use fry light just because I want to maximize how much I can eat.
Definitely.
You know, so like, but for me, like fats wise, I love eggs. So
yeah,
whole eggs. I love salmon. And peanut butter.
That's a fair one.
Yeah, cheese. I like dark chocolate.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of any other fats. Almonds are probably my go-to nut.
Okay, so you're just going to grab a snack kind of?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I try and aim for at the minute around a minimum of kind of 70 grams of fat on average per day.
Okay.
So I can get quite a lot in there, you know. But
yeah, definitely. Variety.
And like my daily energy requirements is probably about 3,200 to 3,500 per day.
Okay, so you're chucking out a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a kind of, and I love carbs, so like it's around 200 grams of protein, 70 fat, and carbohydrates make up the rest. But again, I'm kind of that flexible in a sense of if I go up to 80, 90 fats, then I just kind of dip down the carbs a little bit just to kind of bring everything together. But I'm not overly bothered at the moment, you know. I'm kind of at a stage of weight maintenance, which is kind of like where I want to be. And when you've got a budget of 3,500 calories, you kind of can get away with quite a lot.
You've got a lot to play with there, haven't you, really? Yeah, definitely.
Whereas, you know, yourself, if you've got 1,500 in a deficit, you've got to kind of like,
you got to be a bit more selective with what you're choosing, definitely.
That's like breakfast for me.
Yeah. Few eggs, you're done.
Yeah,
Yeah.
pretty
Yeah.
much. I mean, as far as fats are concerned, again, there was that kind of recommendation for people who are, yeah, general population, that 15 to 80%, but really going below that 15, maybe essential for somebody fit for say like myself who is dieting to a really, really low percentage of body fat, which
Yeah.
isn't healthy in the first place. That's pretty much the only time that that might happen, especially if refeeds are occurring where you're going through these kind of high carbohydrates to restore liver and muscle glycogen.
Yes, you've got that
But
opportunity.
aside from that, the general population really don't need to be kind of going that low, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, and I think there's a recommendation just on a chronic, on a long-term basis, hitting below that 15% is, yeah, it's not optimal for health. So definitely, I think that 20, 22%, something like that, is probably ideal for most of the population. And then, as we said, if they're working with an individual basis, we can then tinker stuff from there. But yeah, as a take-home message, 20, 22% is ideal, I think.
Brilliant, and I think that's pretty much it as far as fats. And we're coming up pretty much on time, Charlie. So,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
we've been on recording for an hour and 1 minute right there.
Wow. Keep going.
If you wouldn't mind, just telling people where they can find you, your website, your Facebook, if you've got Instagram or anything like that, where they can kind of get to see a little bit more of your work.
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as Pointer Sports Therapy, which, as we were discussing earlier, I've got a bit of a bizarre spelling on my surname. So it's Pointer and then Sports Therapy. So you'll find me on those. And then I'm also on Instagram as Robust Rehabber. So my kind of Pointer Sports Therapy is more sports therapy related stuff. And then Robust Rehabber is a bit more of my nutrition, a bit more of me as a person. So, golfer research, etc. So there's a bit of a mix and match on the two social medias there.
Awesome. And I would like to just thank you one more time, Charlie, for
Thank you.
joining me on this week's podcast. And I hope that the listeners took a lot from that and will reach out if they've got any further questions.
Yeah, definitely do, and I will. Yeah, I'll get back to them if I can.
Brilliant. Thank you very
No,
much.
thanks very much. Thank you. Cheers, Ian.